Today's July 19th, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $64,482.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
What's going on, Rick?
Oh, same old, same old.
Same stuff.
Watching the rise and fall of Bitcoin, I guess.
Man, we are just definitely kind of trading sideways. I don't know how else to put it. Like, we have seen dips, but then we see kind of slight recoveries, and then we come back, and yeah.
It's kind of a higher low right now. I mean, things aren't all bad.
No. I will say I completely agree with you on that front. Like, it's, I think last time we recorded, I was expecting that we were probably going to go lower at the time. Just because, I mean, at the time when we looked, like, ETFs were looking horrible. Markets in general were looking kind of bad. I think we had started to, things were kind of back on with Iran again. I mean, now they're really back on with Iran again, but it seemed like there was a bunch of stuff that was just kind of be like, man, we've got some negative headwinds going into where we were headed. And then the market surprised me and we kind of popped back up. Not by a huge margin by any means. I mean, this is not territory that is foreign to us, but we're kind of just right back in the thick. It looks like we got up to 65,000. Looks like around the 15th. And now we're at 64. So how are our theoreticals looking? Like, that's the question. Like, that's always a good barometer for status.
Well, a theoretical one purchased back in October 2023, $3,000 could have bought you 0.0885 Bitcoin. And that $3,000 investment is now worth $5,707. Granted, you know, when Bitcoin was about twice this price, we saw it over $10,000. So
yeah,
still doing good though.
Yeah.
Still doing good. Second theoretical, man, this one's having a rough time just keeping its head above water, which it is right now. Second theoretical purchase is $1,000 at the halving, which was April 19th, 2024, over 2 years ago. Actually 2 years and 3 months ago. So we've already gone another quarter. But that $1,000 could have bought you 0.01564 Bitcoin. And at today's price, that $1,000 investment is worth $1,008.
Wow.
And it all in one place, folks.
Wow. I mean, I'm still glad that is back above water again. And I can't call it above water. Like, we're at the water line.
Yeah.
We're at that nasty level.
Yeah. I mean, one little thing dip down and you're back to drowning. So,
yeah. Last time we recorded, we were, let's see, it was at 982 and that was on the 4th of July. So yeah, I mean, made up a little bit of ground. Just a little bit, but not really.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. I don't remember what it was at last time.
You know,
it was actually at 982. Yeah, I mean, that's like a almost $30 increase. Not bad.
I would be curious. Like, the longer we do this tracking this money this way with these theoreticals, I'm curious. You know, like another 2 years from now, like, are we, obviously we're still not going to be sitting at $1,000, but will it just be like, man, do you remember how long that thing just stayed right where it was and like didn't really, was kind of a nothing burger the whole time? I mean, it wasn't the whole time. There were times that you would have made some money off it. But it's been a while.
Yeah. No, it seems like it's going to be quite a while before we're looking back. It's like, dang, that was a good wise purchase.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's the point on this one is that so far we haven't really felt that. Like with the first theoretical purchase, like that one, you can really see like, man, that was a good call. This one still has, I think, what we got up to 2000 with this one though, right? In the past?
We would have got up to the cusp of 2000 because it was bought at 64 and it peaked out at 126.
Yeah.
So it would have been like 1900 bucks somewhere in there.
Okay.
For that brief blip in October when it reached its peak, and then ever since then, you know, this has been kind of a steady grind down to where we kept losing money or kept going down until it was underwater for a bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm waiting for that moment when we look at that $1,000 and you're like, man, yeah, that was a good time to purchase. I'm not quite seeing that there.
I just think it's kind of a good indicator of, you know, sometimes when you buy is really important unless your time horizon is super long.
Yeah.
You know, this purchase is only two years and 3 months. Exactly. But on the way up, I mean, that's where we caught the previous one in October 2023. 2023 was really a year to buy.
Yeah.
And if we would have bought earlier in that year, you know, we would have been buying Bitcoin at the time it was like 20,000. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's so much, and it feels like, you know, I know we haven't recorded in a bit. There's been some other underlying things going on. But the other part of that is that it feels like there's just not a whole lot going on. I mean, there is, but we're kind of in the same boat that we were in a few weeks back. So it's weird.
For sure.
Everybody's holding their breath, I think, is what it still seems like.
Yeah. No, the Clarity Act, it just seems like it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. So right now we were looking at the ETF charts kind of before we got going, and thankfully we're starting to see some black again. It's not huge, but it finally, at least there's some positive inflows going on after when we were recorded last time, and it was basically just blood everywhere.
Sheer bloodbath.
It was
granted, that one negative day on the 13th, the most recent negative day, pretty much outpaces the following 4 days of inflows. So
yeah.
It's still not great.
Yeah, it's still not great. Like, because you have what? There's about 700 million of outflows, maybe 800 million, still almost $1 billion worth of outflows compared to like maybe a half billion of inflows, or a little bit over a half billion.
Yeah, and I'd say maybe 600 or 700 tops.
Yeah, it's still to the red side, but we'll have to see as when we record again, kind of where that's going on. One of the big things right now is that the Bitcoin ETF issuers currently are absorbing the spot supply faster than the miners can produce. So there's been a few days where the ETF inflows have exceeded the miner issuance by 5 to 10x. They're pushing it. Twitter and X, whatever you want to call it, they're pushing an institutional supply shock narrative. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's enough data there to quite say that. So it's kind of the reflexive loop right now. So you have inflows, which creates price pressure, which creates more inflows. So I still don't quite see that yet. I think that's a little bit too early to call that, especially with like what you just pointed out. Like, we still have more outflows than what we have on inflows.
Yeah.
Which I think is fair to say. But, it could be. It could be that we're going to start to see that reversal. But I would need to see a better price increase than what we've seen so far, because we haven't really... We're trading sideways into the downside for the most part.
I mean, we've popped up, but I don't think we hit the low yet.
No.
And I think maybe in the next episode, we'll kind of talk about the previous lows in the cycle and kind of where they land. But yeah, they usually came in pretty late. It's always the midterm when they come in. So the midterm elections is happening. And it's usually sometime, December, November, in that time frame. Maybe it'll happen in October. I don't know. We'll take a look at it.
Yeah. I agree. So we'll play that out as a next episode. Possibly we'll try and put something together for that. I think that would be good. CPI numbers came in. They're saying, you know, it's basically inflation isn't dead. It's just hiding. So headline CPI for year over year was 3.5%, down from 4.2% in May. So it's the first decline we've seen in 4 months, which, I mean, it was all kind of tied to that memory or memorandum of understanding. I want to say memorandum of understanding with Iran, right?
Well, that memorandum is now just a memory, but yeah.
CPI month over month is negative 0.4%. That's the largest monthly drop since April of 2020. Core CPI year over year is 2.6%, down from 2.9% in May. Energy prices, and obviously this is the big reason why, energy prices are negative 5.7% month over month. Gasoline is negative 9.7% month over month. And that's the biggest reason why we've seen the decline in CPI itself. Food is still up 3% year over year, and food at home is up 2.7% year over year.
Yep, that's not good. Beef is still seems like it's climbing every time you look at it. Even ground beef ain't cheap anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Like, just, man, things are hurting for the American public. And obviously it can't just be us. I think the world over, they've been reeling from the energy prices. What's oil sitting at right now? Let me pull this up. Oil is sitting at $81 a barrel, which, I mean, it's not horrible.
Yeah.
But it's like, man, where would we be right now if you, I mean, and obviously we don't know this. We can't say this because it didn't happen. But if none of this stuff had happened with Iran, where do you think inflation would be right now?
I'd probably be going down some more, in my opinion.
I think we'd be looking at a real cut at this
point. Yeah, potentially. I tell you what, it was kind of nice. Remember, I just remember fondly of, you know, before the war, we were like, we'd watch the gas prices hit $3, maybe go down a little bit, and then it puffed above $3. It's like, man, right now, I'm just be happy to pay $4 per gallon.
Yeah.
Let's get it back down to $4, man. I don't know. It just shows you how quick things can change on you.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of crazy to see. So I pulled up Trueflation real quick. Trueflation rate is showing us at 3.42%. Which is down 0.45%, which Trueflation has been kind of interesting because it has shown significantly less inflation than what CPI has shown, but now it's kind of telling a different story. So right now, Trueflation rate is saying 3.42%, whereas the Fed's headline CPI currently is at 2.65%. And that's just like the latest numbers, which they say is real-time tracking. So, yeah, still not in a good way at all. Meanwhile, when we look at this, real wage growth is only up 1.34%.
Yep. So that just shows that your average American is probably just drowning. Mm-hmm. Whatever they're getting in, the growth is not covering the bills. They're poorer than they were last year.
Yep. And that's, man, I mean, and by a significant amount, especially when you look starting from basically 2020 and just continue to drive that line out, like, and I mean, do you think like the average elite or really high level politicians, I'm not talking about your local city councilors or anything like that, but do you think people really understand what, you know, I guess like the middle class economy is feeling in the United States?
Probably not. But then most politicians, I don't really think, care about the middle class or the plebs, as they're referred to sometimes.
They care about their donors.
Care about their donors. And, you know, granted, if you make enough money, and I think, I don't remember what the congressmen make and senators, but it's pretty solid. It's like 170 grand a year. I don't know. Yeah, they're probably doing just all right.
And I guess. So here's my feeling with that is that 170 grand a year, by no means does that make you rich, but the problem is they still end up making a lot more money than that, than what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You've watched somebody come into Congress with like hardly any net value, and then, you know, so many years in the business, and now they're multimillionaires, at least in their portfolios. It's like, how did that happen?
Yeah. So right now they're saying inflation cooled more than expected due to the sharp drop in energy prices, which we kind of expected. Core inflation remains sticky, but is trending downward. Markets view the Brent as dovish, increasing expectations for an easier Fed policy. By no means would I expect a Fed cut still with these types of numbers, but we'll have to kind of see with the renewed tensions what that's going to do.
Yeah. Well, I don't think inflation is going to be going anywhere, especially if things ramp up pretty strongly in the Middle East.
Yeah.
I don't know. My only advice to Trump is to just get out. I mean, granted, he's not going to listen to me, but if he gets out, he's going to look like he lost. But you know what? He's going to lose. I mean, that's kind of just the way things are going to go. It's just, how bad are you going to lose? Are you going to send troops in there to get to basically the wood chipper?
Yeah.
Now you do that, that's going to be a whole nother, that's a whole nother game right there. So get out now while you can. Just tell Israel, hey, man.
Good luck.
Good luck. But that's not going to happen. That's pie in the sky right there. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I was having a conversation with Abet the other day about this, and he's kind of in the same boat that we are. Like, I mean, he's Vietnam vet, right? And he's like, I don't know how we get out of this situation. Like, without sending troops, and we know, I think pretty strongly, and in the United States, we have no appetite for sending troops, boots on the ground kind of situation. So how do we end this? Like, it is going to have to be some sort of a spin where it's like, okay, well, that's it. We claim victory and Iran's happy and we're happy and go from there.
Israel's not happy. You know what? That's all right.
Yeah. And I think until that kind of gets shored up, I think that's why I feel like everybody's holding their breath.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. And I kind of wonder what it's going to do to the markets long term. I mean, especially if things flare up again, there's no oil moving through the Strait of Hormuz. You know, 20% of the oil is lost. Man, that could get really nasty.
Yeah. And it's not even just so much just for us, but you would have a global energy crisis. And I go back to thinking about World War II, and like one of the biggest factors as to why Japan attacked us was we restricted their oil. And when you restrict like all of Asia's oil, because a lot of it comes out of the Middle East, you know, especially through the Strait of Hormuz, like what happens at that point? Does China get desperate? Does Japan get desperate?
That's the thing. Well, China might be able to, you know, they can purchase a lot from Russia since they're friendly now. But I mean, it's kind of weird, especially Japan. Like, it's an island that has a lot of, as far as natural resources, like they can produce a lot of food and stuff like that, but they don't really have any oil.
Mm-mm.
They have to buy everything from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And like it or not, we've made improvements in other technologies that provide energy, but they're not at the point where countries can sustain themselves. I mean,
yeah, it's not like an if or, like it's not, and it's not even close, right? Like, it's not like you can be like, well, you know what, we're going to just go solar. It's fine. You know, a little bit of an increase in the short term, but we'll switch over to solar and then we'll be okay. No, it's not like that.
They'll drown economically and half your population is going to die because you can't sustain yourself on that. So, it's still kind of interesting that oil is still playing that integral role in the economy. So,
yeah. Yeah, we'll just have to kind of play that by ear and see how that kind of continues on as we continue to march down this path. We have no choice, at least us as bystanders of whatever the political elite make decisions on. One of the things that we were kind of talking about in the beginning before we kind of started getting going was the Clarity Act. So right now, lawmakers are signaling amendments instead of a full rewrite. People on X are framing it as the Patriot Act for crypto. Industry pushback from Coinbase miners and the PACs. So basically, and I think what we did, we didn't talk about that before, but right now Polymarket is showing Clarity Act passing at only 40%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not looking good. Now, when people are claiming that it's the Patriot Act for crypto, are they basically just saying it's stripping out privacy as far as crypto is concerned?
That's, and I would need more clarification on that, because to me, Patriot Act for crypto sounds very, it's got negative connotations.
For sure.
At least in my opinion.
I mean, that's what the Patriot Act was back in, you know, after 9/11, they passed the Patriot Act and it gave the government all sorts of surveillance capabilities that, I mean, it almost killed the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe it pretty much did. We just don't know it yet.
No, it's happening behind the scenes. We're not aware, right? I don't know. I still think, I think there was a lot of hope in the beginning that the Clarity Act was going to be a big win for not only the individual, but also like the Coinbases and stuff like that of the world, where it was going to take away some of that power from the banking elite and switch some of that back over to some of these other crypto exchanges that had kind of popped up and some of the miners and those types of things. And I think as this kind of continues on, they continue to gut it in that sense. And the bankers are getting basically what they want. Because I know one of the early issues was the yield, right? So if you had stable coins, would you earn the yield yourself? Or would it go back into the banker's pocketbook? And it seems like the bankers are winning out. That's why it continues to stall.
Yeah.
And I've said this before on the show, is that my fear is that if this doesn't get passed before midterms, it's not going to ever get passed.
Yeah, but I still stand by Bitcoin's going to take its place one way or the other, and crypto, I think. Well, I really just care about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bitcoin's going to take its place whether Congress approves it or not, because the reckless insanity, you know, the fiscal insanity that we're watching the whole world engage in, that's basically the only thing that's going to survive, or gold. But
yeah, and speaking of gold, that goes into our next story that we're going to discuss here. You sent me a video earlier, kind of give us a highlight of what it was.
Basically, China in Shanghai, they're going to stop trading paper certificates of gold, so they want physical only. And it sounds kind of interesting because when people are just trading pieces of paper instead of actual gold, I mean, there's a lot of costs that go with, you know, transporting gold, securing gold, insuring the gold, all this stuff, you know. And so paper is just easier. But the thing is we don't know. And, you know, let's say there's a vault of gold somewhere, mm-hmm. And people are trading on it. Like, is there multiple certificates that people are selling for that specific pile of gold? I mean, we don't know.
Yeah.
None of that stuff is disclosed. We don't know, you know, do the amount of paper certificates that we're selling actually match the correct volume of gold that we are in possession of?
Right.
That's kind of the key. And I think China is about to, I mean, that this goes into effect on the 24th, which is Friday. They're trying to, I don't know, call everyone's bluff. Or they're not really calling the bluff. They're just making people put up or shut up. So it could be very tricky.
No, I completely agree. I mean, and we're kind of seeing the same thing within the Bitcoin space, where you have a lot of paper Bitcoin being traded. Not even necessarily, I'm not going to say by the ETFs per se, because I think the ETFs have been pretty straightforward with it. But the problem is, in the current monetary system and in current banking and trading and all those types of things, say there's only 5 bricks of gold, and that's all that exists. Well, ETFs can trade for the 5 bricks of gold, right? It's not going to go very far. They could fractionalize it and they could sell more that way. But what starts to happen too is you get the options, right? And that's another layer with more fake gold. Like, it's just paper gold at that point. It doesn't exist, but there are options on that gold. even though it's not really the underlying asset itself, there's this, they continually like build these walls of paper infrastructure around it without ever touching the actual true underlying asset. So that's where you start to build like a huge kind of a wall around something that really has little to do with the physical asset itself. Am I explaining that correctly?
I think so.
It's kind of a loose term of go ahead.
Yeah, it's a loose term of it. But I mean, that's the thing. When banks pull, you know, when they're told to go buy something, they just put it on paper that they bought it. Mm-hmm. Whether that stuff is available, like, it's kind of like that GameStop short that happened a couple of years ago.
Right.
It's like there was more shorts for GameStop than there were actual stocks available for GameStop.
Right. Because it's an option that exists outside of the realm of the actual product.
Exactly.
You know, and like you were saying, like the bank puts down that, yeah, they bought this whatever gold, whatever the case may be, we'll use that gold as the point. But then the other place they write down, well, yeah, we sold them some gold. They didn't actually do anything. They just marked it down on paper.
Yep.
Or probably now it's in a digital screen.
Yeah. And we're just going to find out now who's lying, who's been full of crap. Or at least we have a potential to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the reason behind this is that obviously because there is so much, I think part of what in the video that you'd shared, part of the framing was that because gold has been so volatile lately, I mean, we've seen it with silver and gold, you know, kind of with the increase and then the decrease. Because what did we see with gold? Like, how much did it go up during that whole time that we saw?
What did it get up to, $5,000?
See, I'm trying to see. I'm going back in the charts. Give me a second here. Like
maybe two. Well, silver did a very similar thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
silver went over $120 an ounce when it was like, you know, not too long before that, it was at somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 an ounce. Granted, it's had a sharp fall off since then.
Exactly. And that's what they're claiming on. It looks like gold went up to, looks like right around 5,600.
5,600. Okay.
And so what they're claiming is that it was dangerous, right, for regular investors. Because they're always looking down for the little guy, you know, China.
Oh, yeah. Always.
They're always looking for the little guy. But, basically, it was collateral fraud that could have happened because all of a sudden you had this huge rise and then there was a downfall, right? Like, and especially like with Bitcoin going from 5,000 to 4,000, meh, that's just a Tuesday at noon. But with gold, that doesn't typically happen that way.
Yeah.
So basically they say that there's collateral fraud concerns. And then that there's the shadow banking stress that is happening behind the scenes. So what they're saying is that basically what's going to happen is if paper gold is getting restricted, what's that going to do to the physical gold? What's that going to do to the price?
Why? I think the most likely thing is it's going to skyrocket again. But time will tell.
Yeah. I don't know. And that's kind of the interesting thing with Bitcoin. Like I said, the ETFs, I trust the ETFs for Bitcoin for the most part still, but it's the extra market activity that happens around Bitcoin and, you know, with the current stock exchange, with the options and those types of things, where all of a sudden you have this huge, basically pool of money that is not tied at all and is not even reflected necessarily within the Bitcoin price. But whenever those things collapse, it creates tremors across the market. Even though it's not anything to do with the Bitcoin block exchange or the, you know, the blockchain or, crypto markets in general, but because it's part of Wall Street and the way that they do business, you know, that's the big question. Like what happens to gold at that point? And I think, I mean, potentially you're right. I think we could see another increase in gold prices. It could even be a decrease for a short time and then a skyrocket. as people kind of react to that.
Yeah.
So.
I know. It's just something that it's a new wrinkle that's going to happen. And it's, I don't know if there's going to be fireworks from this or not, but it could be. Would be interesting.
What do you think China's move to gain out of this? Do you think it's just to flex how much gold they have?
Yeah. I mean, I think they've been accumulating gold for a lot longer than people want to say, at least our government wants to say. But I think they've been accumulating it. And previously, I mean, our government model, the whole Bretton Woods agreement, you know, America was supposed to have the gold and then we'd print the dollars, and but we'd only print, you know, $35 for every ounce of gold that we had. But if you look at what we were doing in the 60s with like, especially like under Lyndon Johnson, where we were fighting the Vietnam War, we were doing the Great Society programs. We were just, we're obviously printing a lot of money, and governments were starting to call our bluff. They were going to bring all their dollars and collect all the gold because that's how it was supposed to work.
Yeah.
And then Nixon ended up taking us off the gold standard, stopped participating in that entirely. And so, you know, it's been, if you watch the supply of money, it's even skyrocketed since then.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of curious that, what's his name again? The,
talking about Scott Bessin.
Scott Bessin said that he saw $1 trillion worth of,
gold at Fort Knox.
Well, we'll see if that's really correct. I mean, we might find out if that is not the case.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and that's the other thing. We've been selling a whole bunch of treasury bills, and which is basically debt or bonds that we have no way of paying back. And so, yeah, there, things could get really nasty for America. So,
and that, man, while you were talking about this, I mean, what it comes to in my head, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but if everybody's playing a poker game right now, and everybody's like showing their, you know, talking a big game, saying they got this, they got that, could it be that China is going to call everybody's bluff and be like, all right, we've accumulated enough gold at this point that now we can go ahead and we can see, you know, who's swimming naked, to use Warren Buffett's example.
Yep.
Let's pull back the water.
Yeah, I think that's exactly when the tide pulls back, we're going to see who's swimming naked. And I think that's what they're trying to do.
I mean, I think from my perspective, too, I think my problem with the whole thing, too, especially it coming from China, I don't trust them. And I've always said that that's one of the big things with the issues with the BRICS. That, you know, which country do you trust to hold the gold? Which one of those fine folks, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to see how that kind of plays out. Be interesting though, to see what happens with gold. Keep it on your radar coming this, at the end of this next week. And I mean, even moving into it, right? What that's going to do.
Yeah. Now we'll maybe discuss that in the next episode. Maybe it's a nothing burger, or maybe it's like the craziest thing where gold shoots up to who knows what, $30,000
an ounce. Ooh. Ooh, doggies. Be interesting for sure. But yeah, that's pretty much all I had for this, this episode this week. What did you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, we appreciate you all listening. We hope, everybody is finding their way the best they can through this economic hailstorm we got going on, and, just keep investing in yourself. That's the only thing I could say.
That's right. And I'd say be stacking a pile. Maybe look to get into Bitcoin. This is the year, or this year, the rest of this year and early next year. That's when you have that first theoretical purchase where you buy low and then you'll be sitting pretty for several years out.
Yeah, you'll be looking pretty smart. So thank you all for listening.
Not financial advice, but you know.
Not financial advice. Don't come after us later. Thank y'all for listening.
Bye.
Bye.